Well, I'm from Windom, Minnesota, originally, southwest Minnesota, and I now live in New York City, and, you know, for the last 25 years, I've basically, my life has been about my jazz orchestra and writing orchestral jazz, and I first came to that, I really think, because I had a wonderful piano teacher when I was a child. So even though I was from a really tiny farm town in southwest Minnesota, there was this woman that in 1965, when I was 5 years old, she moved from Chicago to Windom because her son and her husband had both died in 1 month. Her only living family was a daughter in Windom, and this woman was a world-class stride pianist and classical pianist, and she was just amazing. And, you know, nobody like that would normally leave, you know, a life in Chicago to go to Windom, Minnesota, but desperation brought her to Windom, and she started giving lessons, and I heard her play. She came to a party at my parents' house because her daughter was were friends of my parents. And so she came over, and I still have pictures of that evening. And she played piano, and that for me was it. I wanted to be her, you know. So it just changed my life. And there was something about her not drawing any lines of discrimination between classical music and jazz and American songbook. For her, good music was good music, and I think that's followed me through my whole life.
Were you thinking, even with this first experience, studying with this remarkable lady, that perhaps this would carry you to college to study music?
Yeah, I pretty much, you know, for me, I remember in first grade, I wasn't sure. I remember my teacher asked us what I wanted to be, and I told her I wanted to be an ornithologist because I loved birds, and that's something that still carries in my life. But I remember thinking, it's either going to be birds or music, and, you know, and music won out. So I pretty much knew I was a musician. I just didn't know what it would turn into, you know. I kind of dreamed about composing, but that seemed like too lofty of a goal or something, or that, you know, I wasn't really sure if I actually had the ability to do that, and, you know, so it was just, it's been a long, slow process of just getting my toe wet in each new adventure. And before you know it, after years, you look back and you say, wow, how did that happen? So it's, you know, it's a day-by-day development. It's not like I had these huge long-term goals. I want to be a composer, you know, I'm going to have a jazz orchestra. Those came into being, you know, along the way, slowly.
Well, how did jazz slip into the equation?
I mean, I guess initially with Mrs. Butler, with my teacher, but that was old stride style. And then in college at the University of Minnesota, I was studying with a wonderful man named Paul Fettler, and he was coming out of the Hindemith tradition. And at that time, I was discovering a lot of jazz, like modern jazz, that I hadn't heard before that, and it wasn't even so modern. I mean, this is like 1980, and, you know, I was discovering a lot of people from the 60s, people like Wayne Shorter and, you know, great jazz people like Gil Evans, and I was listening to so much of that music, and he could hear the influence coming into my writing. So he said to me, why don't you go over to where the big band rehearses and at the school and just watch them rehearse and write something for them? And it was really a great thing because, you know, there's a lot of classical composing teachers out there that the last thing they would do is encourage their student to, you know, write jazz, you know, write for a jazz orchestra. But he could really hear that that's where my my ear was going and my passion in a way. So he encouraged that, and it caught in a big way.
Did you have any idea whenever you began listening to some of this that eventually this would dictate a path to the doorstep of Gil Evans?
Well, you know, it was so funny because one time I had something happened where one night I was listening to Gil's music, and you know how you kind of just daydream, but it's involuntary, sort of fantasy sort of things come into your mind, and I saw this whole thing of being his assistant, kind of an apprentice to him. It was weird. I was just listening to his music, and it was, you know, as we used to do back then, you know, turning off the lights, and of course we weren't distracted by cell phones. You know, there weren't all these things that would come into our life involuntarily, you know, so I had that space to listen, and I was just envisioning this whole thing, and it ended up happening quite by luck, you know. It didn't happen by me searching it out, but years later in New York, somebody who was his good friend got to know me and knew about my passion for Gil and told Gil about me, and he asked me to be his assistant. So, you know, strange things have a way of happening when you sort of, I don't know, I don't even know what I did. Maybe it was some sort of vision. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. I guess Gil Evans, we could safely say that he really changed the way that we think about big band jazz. It became more an orchestrated kind of a jazz than had previously existed. So I hear that in your music, that you've been profoundly influenced by that.
What I would say is, you know, I was definitely influenced by that, but at the same time, I think that was my natural sensibility because of my first, you know, introduction into music by this piano teacher I had back in Wyndham. So I think it's exactly why I was attracted to his music, because I think I had the same feeling that, you know, why shouldn't the development of form of classical music come into jazz? You know, because jazz for so long was largely theme and variations. You know, it's a tune and it cycles around. But, you know, classical music had these wonderful forms, and people like, you know, Brookmeyer and Gil Evans, but even more Brookmeyer, who ended up being my teacher, you know, really brought that aspect of classical music into jazz. Gil Evans brought all the subtlety of orchestration of classical music and the sense of lines and counterpoint into jazz and large ensemble jazz writing. And so, you know, I always kind of felt like, you know, why aren't the elements of classical music more in this world? They should be. And so, yeah, I think that's why I loved Gil's music. He was like a kindred spirit for me.
It attracted such an interesting group of people, didn't it? What became referred to as third stream jazz or third stream music.
Yeah, you know, although what I would say, you know, my feeling about third stream is that many of the people who did third stream, to me, felt like they were trying to bring together two genres of music. And what I felt about Gil's music is that it wasn't trying to do anything. It was that, you know, it was its own music that is just purely born out of somebody who has had exposure to all these different things. You know, it had the element of improvisation of jazz, but the grace and the delicacy and the translucency of the classical music that he listened to, you know, the Impressionist composers, Spanish Impressionist composers. I mean, he came to flamenco through the Impressionist composers, not through actual flamenco music. So, you know, Gil knew a lot of classical music. He was He didn't go to school, but he went to the library all the time and studied scores. And, you know, he was very, very studied on his own.
Thank you.
not as uncommon these days for musicians to ignore the walls, like between jazz and classical or jazz and rock. But I'm wondering if there still isn't a bit of risk involved in ignoring those.
Oh, I think there is, because I think people love to categorize things. I think it's going to change more and more. Gil Evans said, I remember in one of his liner notes, I read something that he said, you know, he doesn't like labels, that's the marketer's problem. And, you know, I think it's really true, you know, that it's the marketing of music that has pushed us into these different labels and categories. But, you know, music is music, and I think the direction that music is going is that it's going to become more and more mixed up and less easy to categorize what things are.
I saw a reference that described your music as sometimes being a cross between avant-garde jazz and modern classical music. I'm not sure if that's a fair assessment or not. What would be your reaction to that?
Oh, I don't know that that's a very good description of it. I have a hard time describing my music, actually. Generally, I think that my music has something American sounding in it. I think my music has something that has the sense of place of where I'm from in it. I'm not sure what that means, but I think you recognize it when people recognize it when they listen to it.
You spoke of your music speaking of your roots, your place of America, and we often think of jazz in that way. And yet I know that you just got back from some extensive work in Europe, and that you often go there working with musicians in Europe playing your music, and I assume music of others, I'm not sure. But is the climate different for jazz in Europe than it is in America?
You know, certain places, so I was in Scandinavia, and in Sweden, they much more are coming out of what I think is an American tradition. But if you go to Norway, it's so funny, they have their own sound. It's very sonic oriented, you know, it's really, all I can say is, like, if I think of looking at the Northern Lights or something, it sort of has something of that sensibility in the music, and they really have their own thing, and they don't look to the American kind of jazz for their own work. So, you know, some places are very much in an American tradition, and some aren't. But, you know, jazz had a way of just spreading across the earth, and I do love going to different places and working with my music, because my music, you know, it has this element of improvisation, and the rhythm section can really shape the kind of personality of the music. So if I, for instance, go to Brazil, you know, the kind of Brazilian approach to rhythm and time and energy that comes to the music is very different than when I play with my own band in New York, or if I go to Sweden. And even in Italy, the musicians have a certain kind of just let it all hang out sort of expression that I don't hear maybe in some other countries. So there are personalities. I mean, you can't totally generalize, but there are cultures within jazz for sure. Thank you.
Ornithology. You mentioned your long interest in bird watching. Do you think, beyond the fact, I know that you've integrated bird call now and then into some of your music, but do you find that bird watching impacts your life as a musician in other ways?
I think it does because, I know it does because to me, music is not my life. My life is my life, and music expresses my life. You know, I'm doing music almost all the time, but I'm trying to do more other things more of the time because to me, you know, one of the big mistakes is for musicians is they go to the, you know, they live their life as kids, you know, and you do all your activities and your beautiful things, and you fall in love with music largely because music becomes an expression of all those things. Then suddenly you go to the conservatory, and you're practicing and you're judging yourself compared to everybody else, and you forget how to make music just an expression of your life. And, you know, and it becomes about judgment and comparison. And to me, it makes for brilliant musical technicians, but it doesn't make for beautiful communicators through sound, you know. And so I always tell musicians, if you don't have a life outside of music, at a certain point, you're not going to have anything left to say. You know, music's just the conduit for expressing about life. So, you know, for me, I would say I have many things that I'm passionate about in life, but primarily it's the natural world, and probably my hugest thing that I just love are birds. And so when I make time for that in my life, then I feel like making music, you know, because I'm happy and I'm centered and I'm kind of in that place where I was when I was a kid, you know, when I was much closer to nature and much more grounded, I think.
Well, I suspect you're a much better birder than am I, but I've always found with my experiences of bird watching that it opens up your field of view, your field of perception in every way.
Oh, it is just so true. I mean, to me it's like also the same thing that does it is looking through a telescope and looking into outer space, you know, and you look at a supernova or something and suddenly you just say, oh my God, it's so vast, it's so incredible. Who am I? Gosh, I'm insignificant, but I can perceive this, so I am significant. What is it? What's the meaning? You know, it's like suddenly it just makes you feel like the universe is so magical and you feel so much gratitude to be able to witness it through two eyes and through our ears and whatever senses we've been given. And, you know, birds, if you think about, you know, the evolution and the sheer variety and the behavior and the nest-building abilities and the feat of migration and the feat of flight, you know, birds flying thousands of kilometers without stopping and navigating and coming to the exact same spot, you know, year after year. And, oh, you know, if people can't be inspired by that and want to preserve that and see the awe in that and that is so much better than anything else in life, I can't relate to people who don't feel that, you know.
Schneider, band leader, composer, ornithologist, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. Maria will be in Austin, April 11th through the 13th, working with the UT Jazz Orchestra as part of the Longhorn Jazz Festival. Her participation comes to a head Saturday evening at 7:30 in Bates Recital Hall on the campus of UT's Butler School of Music. Ticket information and purchases are at 800-982-BEVO. Thanks again, Maria. I hope to see you in Austin.
Absolutely.